Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck, joined by Shad Marquitz again, my co-host. We are going to be focusing on, again, the resource sector, but also having some comments on the U.S. equity markets, which continue to show strength even in the face of a lot of bearish calls. But boy, oh boy, that rotation into tech and more growth stocks continues. And unfortunately for the metals, well, they're stuck, and gold continues to be in this downtrend. So Shad and I are kicking off this show with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of The Hedgeless Horseman. Now, Eric, let's start off with just a general comment on how you're playing this continued downtrend for gold and the gold stocks in terms of your portfolio management. We were chatting off mic before recording, and you mentioned that you are more diversified than ever, of course, in the resource sector. How has that come to be, Eric? Why are you more diversified right now? And what are you diversified across in terms of stocks?
The simple answer is that I still, and I've been saying this for I don't know how long. I mean, I think especially the junior miners, especially the gold junior miners, are very much undervalued relative to gold. And of course, right now, the sentiment is awful. I mean, we had a 11-month correction or whatever, and there's been a ton of times where it feels like, okay, now the a bull is going to resume, and then it gets sold off, and we hit an lower low and a lower low and a lower low. And recently we actually had a higher high, and then that got basically someone took a bat to the knee again, and down we went. So I mean, I'm just looking at what people are saying on Twitter. It's really dreadful. I mean, people are really down, commenting and tweeting about gold, etc., or miners overall. I mean, the sentiment is really horrible. So that usually means that the junior miners are very cheap, and I think they are very cheap. I mean, I remember when I was dreaming about $1,400 gold. And like I said previously, I mean, if someone asked me, given where the valuations of the juniors are trading, would I guess that gold was at 1771 right now? No way that I would have guessed that. I might have said like, yeah, around 1400 or whatever. So, and to the point of diversification, I mean, I don't like diversification for diversification's sake. I'm very diversified now because there are so many great risk reward setups, in my opinion. So I don't feel like I'm losing out too much on quality and getting the benefit of actually being diversified, because nowadays I'm so diversified that I don't really follow any particular company on any given day. I mean, what the stock is doing, etc. So I mean, that in terms of quality of life, I think that's great. And again, since there are so many bargains, I mean, that's the whole reason that I feel like, I don't see the real trade-off. Because if we go back to 2016-17 or whatever, when gold was at 1300-1400 and juniors were even higher than they are now, I mean, in that point in time, I think there were a bunch of overvalued juniors, and that means that sentiment was high and the amount of bargains was relatively low. So in that case, I actually had to concentrate, let's say, and do real due diligence to find the ones that weren't really overvalued, still undervalued, and then I would just pile into them. But now I can pick 40, 50 juniors or whatever that I think actually are cheap. I mean, there will be differences, etc. But again, it's like I could invest with a shotgun right now, in my opinion. I could make X amount of portfolios if I had to pick 10 companies each, and I think everyone would outperform GDXJ, for example. So I just think it's, it's like Christmas out there.
Well, Eric, you raise a couple interesting points there. So on your portfolio, you're saying you're more diversified than ever. But we're also noting that the sentiment is pretty down after a correction in the precious metals for an extended period of time. So a lot of people have told us they get more selective during this time period. They get rid of their optionality plays. They get rid of their higher risk things, and they go into safer names, and they go into names that they know are going to rebound, or maybe get some of that first investor, that generalist investor inflows, the bigger producers, or some of the ones that are included in GDX, GDXJ, SILJ, et cetera. But you're saying you're more diversified than ever, and you've added more names at more of a shotgun approach because you believe most of them are going to have plenty of upside and outperform the indexes. So you're saying you're more diversified now and maybe less selective on the quality because you feel there's so much upside left. And you also made the point that compared to where the metals are and where they were the last cycle, they're still undervalued. So are you more diversified into, you're saying a shotgun approach, but are you looking at mostly exploration plays, or do you like the development plays where they have assets in the ground and you think that those will eventually get re-rated higher? Are you looking at any producers? Which kind of stocks are you in right now?
I mean, that's a good point. Because as we know, the COVID crash of 2020, I think it was around March, sentiment was obviously very bad at that point in time. And I mean, the whole feeling of the world is going to end, etc. But at that point in time, you actually had the tier one developers, etc. I'm thinking about Mag Silver, for example. They went down 60 to 70%. But you don't see Mag Silver trading at $5 per share, for example. So if I could go back and compare it to now, back then it was so the sentiment was so shit and it was a liquidity event, etc. That the very de-risked tier one projects were at fire sale prices. I don't see the same thing right now where there are, no-brainers where you could basically put in 100% of your portfolio in. And you almost, for sure know that you're going to at least have a double in relatively short order. Again, I think it's a different time frame right now. I do think the juniors themselves are more undervalued than the sector overall. But in the COVID crash, for example, everything went down. So I do see more alpha opportunity in companies with exploration potential, et cetera, because I have no idea how long this, correction is going to, keep ongoing. And if I don't see that I'm able to buy, let's say, Mag Silver for 70% off, et cetera, then I'm going to stick to the alpha plays because there's a whole bunch of juniors that have started to drill or will be drilling very soon. And in that case, I think that time is on my side, because even if we have a neutral gold and silver price for the next 6 months or whatever, I mean, if the companies I invest in have, pretty good return on investment in terms of their dollar spent, etc. So when the actual bull kicks off again, that's just going to be more leverage because the company has created more internal value. I don't really like optionality plays unless there's a liquidity event, because again, Mag Silver, it's not like I don't know it too well. So, I mean, as far as I know, it's not the, best growth case, let's say. But I mean, when that went down 60-70%, I mean, then it actually became a no brainer, because if there's one silver mine that's going to get built, et cetera, it's the tier one assets. So it's just a different time period. I see right now I'm more looking at and thinking that the juniors are broadly undervalued relative to the other ones. But back in the COVID crash, everything went down.
So Eric, when you're investing in some of these stocks, obviously you are, from what you're outlining, you're seeing stocks cheap right now. And that's a bit of a change from what we heard back at the tail end of the run at the tail end of last summer, when stocks were getting a little ahead of themselves, maybe, at least in terms of some of the juniors. And the argument was we aren't seeing M&A activity because, well, for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons being, the juniors did already have a run. Now that we've seen a broad pullback across the board in these stocks, do you think these lower prices in some of these stocks attract some more takeover options? Are you investing at all around the goal of finding takeovers?
No, not really. I mean, the thing, again, with mature plays is that you're really almost only waiting for either sentiment to shift or a takeover or whatever. So that you can't really control, obviously, because there isn't that much M&A, or at least haven't been. I mean, I don't know how many developers and proved up resources there are out there in total, but I know that not many get actually, you know, get taken over. And besides, I mean, let's say your favorite takeover candidate gets taken over with a 30% premium. Okay, sure. I mean, that's good and all. First of all, you don't know when that's going to happen. Second of all, you don't know if it will happen at all. And if you actually, you know, stick to companies where you think that they can, with their own money, create enough value that it could warrant a 30% increase. And if they are lucky to be able to do that, that's probably going to, you know, continue. Because if you make a discovery, obviously, I mean, if you make a discovery hole, that's probably not the only value creation that will, you know, come out, because they'll probably keep on drilling, etc. So I try to stick to the things that I can control. And I don't like the strategy of like hoping that some, you know, white knight or whatever is going to come in and save you. So I like I think I've said before, it's like, I am in this sector because I think we are in a long-term bull, but I try to pick companies like we are in a, you know, chronic bear market, and don't expect anyone to really save me, let's say. Because, I mean, a real discovery is going to turn some heads, even in a bad market. I mean, the poster child right now is like newfound gold. During the 11-month correction, or I think it was at least 7-8 months at the start, in the last correction, I mean, newfound gold just kept on plowing, because they kept, they had their discovery and then they just kept on hitting. So it's like, if you would have thought that, oh, I'm going to get out of newfound gold, if you knew for sure that gold was going to have a 8-month downtrend, you would still miss out on like 180% or whatever. So that's the stuff I like. It's like, okay, if you picked the right companies, you probably do okay even in a bear market. And if it's a bull market, you're probably going to do great. Whereas if you're in optionality place or mature place or whatever, that they can't really create much value internally, then you're just stuck with, you know, hoping the sentiment will get better, or, you know, that the miracle of a buyout comes along. And I don't think that's a, you know, a repeatable strategy, really.
Well, Eric, let me toss another idea back at you then. Because obviously, if an explorer hits and they do they put out some great drill results, that stock's going to move agnostic of the metals price, whether it's a good metals price environment or a bad metals price environment. If somebody makes a legitimate discovery like what Newfound Gold has done, and we've seen it many, many other times, they're going to run hot and they're going to get a lot of investor interest. But right now, it's mostly precious metals investors trading amongst themselves, as we say. But when the generalists come back in, they're a little bit more skeptical of, you know, the very smaller stocks, and they're going to pile into probably the larger producers or the royalty companies. So the developers are in this weird spot that I see where they're not really getting valued anywhere close. I mean, not even close to where their economic studies are, but they also still are explorers. They also can still step out on their projects and make a discovery. They also can still find a satellite deposit. Sometimes they have two or three projects, and while one may be moving into construction, they may have a second one that starts hitting that becomes even more attractive or as attractive as the second one. So I often hear that there's nothing to do on these takeover plays but just wait for optionality or wait for someone to come and buy it. But couldn't these developers still make great discoveries, and couldn't that still move the needle in those stocks?
I mean, that's a good point, because basically you're painting the picture of the perfect risk-reward play, basically. Something that has so much in terms of margin of safety, what's already been proven, because it's trading so cheap relative to what they already have, that it becomes, in some case, like an alpha play. Because, I mean, there are some companies, like you say, they are so overvalued that they could actually, you know, become a multi-bagger and they still wouldn't be overvalued. So then the odds are real on your side, because the risks are to the upside. And if they have additional exploration potential, I mean, the leverage on, if there's a tiny enterprise value, which is already backed like 6 times by what they already have on paper, obviously any additional exploration success will have incredible leverage to where you bought in. So, I mean, those are the best cases, at least when you're talking about having a more concentrated portfolio there. So I see those kind of plays like the cornerstone positions or whatever. Like when I pick companies for the family, et cetera, those are typically the ones I choose. But that I do want to see something on the upside still, because I mean, if you have a mature project that is very boring, let's say, and there seems to be no real interest from any acquirer or whatever, if you can't make the project better, that, you know, is kind of a bad sign, because, okay, there's no way to reach that perhaps critical threshold where a larger company would actually acquire. But if you find the cases like you're suggesting that have that significant margin of safety, and the project could become bigger and probably then also more high quality, that's like the perfect storm. I mean, in an ideal world, those would be your only place, basically, because I mean, it's more fun to be in grassroots or early stage explorers, but they don't really have any margin of safety. I mean, if you had a portfolio of only exploration plays, theoretically, even though it's unlikely, you could have end up in a bull market having no gold or silver. So again, when it comes to risk reward and the value of actually compounding, because you can't compound a loss, the place you just described, they are the best place to be, all things considered.
Well, Eric, all things considered, let's just say that there's somebody out there and they don't have the ability to have a big diversified portfolio. They maybe are looking at this as an opportunity to position in some of these stocks that have sold down. Maybe share with us a couple of stocks that you're looking at right now that even if you already have a position and you're not personally adding, you think are at an attractive place to add because of key catalysts they have or just where they're at. Maybe they're too beaten down. Is there a couple stocks you have your eye on that look like really good value and you wish you had a ton more money to dump into them?
Well, if we're talking like more conservative risk reward, et cetera, then I think, for example, Rookmaster Resources looks like a no-brainer to me because that project is already big and it looks like it could be huge and it's really cheap. And I think it's mostly punished because the company has to pay like $40 million to get the fully acquired the project. But I mean, $40 million when it comes to that product, I think that's, you know, someone's gonna pay that for sure. Then I think like Magna Gold is pretty interesting. They just reached full production at their first mine, and they have a bunch of other projects. It's not the best mine in the world, but I mean, that's some when it based on the sum of its parts, I think it's really cheap. White Rock Minerals, I think, is really cheap. They're acquiring a small scale mine and they have a bunch of projects. Nova Resources, I've been adding that one recently for the first time in a while because their shares in Newfound Gold, I mean, it's starting to back a significant portion of the enterprise value and they are ramping up Beaton's Creek. Then we have like. What could I find more? I mean, yeah. I mean, I have a whole list. I'm trying to be as conservative as I can because I mean, I'm in the more riskier portion of the sector. Dolly Warden Silver, for example. I mean, that one has come down. They have like 22 million, I think, Canadian in cash. Enterprise value is kind of low. It's the lowest it's been in a while. So I mean, I think if you're a silver bull, for example, I mean, I see bad headlines in terms of jurisdiction risk all the time now, it seems. So I've been trying to focus more on jurisdiction. If you like silver, I think Dolly Warden is, you know, a no-brainer. I don't know how much growth potential there is, but it's a high-grade resource in British Columbia, with like 40 million ounces, and they've just started, I think, drilling. So, I mean, there are a ton of opportunities out there. Mayfair Gold recently put out a good hole. Stock is down to, I think, around 90 million Canadian market cap. I think they have around 15 or 20 million in cash. I'm not sure off the top of my head. And that's a proven resource already, and it looks like it could grow. TriStar Gold, super cheap. I mean, I could list a whole bunch of names, but if we're talking about some margin of safety, those are some, in my opinion, even though these are juniors, I mean, most of them aren't actual producers, etc., but they are the more conservative place in my portfolio.
Okay, well, it sounds like you're seeing a lot of opportunity out there, and even some of those stocks you just mentioned, it's interesting to see some of the fundamental value of just cash in the bank or shares that these companies hold that isn't really being reflected in some of these share prices. Again, these companies right now, there's a number of them that just aren't getting very much value or any value for their production, for their asset. It's just been a tough downtrend for some of these stocks. Yes, there are a couple that have bucked the trend, but broadly, there are a lot of stocks that have moved down. So, hey, Eric, always great chatting with you, buddy. I guess in full disclosure, I'm assuming that you hold all of those shares. I was trying to keep up with all of them. I hold Novo Resources. I know Shad holds Dolly Varden and Novo. I'll post a note within the weekend show posting if we own any others after I review this. But hey, overall, Eric, great chatting with you as always. Thanks for taking time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.